think for much of my life, I thought that pain and joy were mutually exclusive, that you couldn't hold both in your heart at the same time. But as I've gotten older, I've noticed that there's something beautiful about the highs and the lows intertwining. And Cubby and I sought God and each other and found comfort right there in the messy middle.
That's Rebecca St. James describing how she's learned to trust God with her dreams, her future, her present. Welcome to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. Rebecca and her husband Cubby have joined us in the studio, and they're going to share their journey with God and as a couple with us. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, I think trusting God in the messy middle is life, right? If we attach our emotional wellness to highs and lows, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, God's present with us always, in the highs and in the lows. And I think the irony is we learn more about ourselves in the lows, like what we're deficient at, where we need help. Have you had that experience?
Just recently, like today.
So that's why this is such a great story with Rebecca and her husband, Cubby. And we're going to cover their love story, which is always good, because it, I think, will rekindle even your own journey in marriage.
Yeah, there's something here for all of us, no matter where you are with regard to marriage. Maybe you haven't even gotten married yet, or maybe it's been decades. You're going to learn from Rebecca and Cubby. Rebecca is an award-winning singer, songwriter, and actress, author of more than a dozen books. Cubby Fink is a successful film director and producer. He was in a Grammy-nominated pop music band, and together, Cubby and Rebecca have written a terrific book capturing their story and offering some really good life lessons. It's called Lasting Ever: Faith, Music, Family, and Being Found by True Love.
Rebecca, it's so good to have you back at Focus.
Jim, such a joy.
I don't know how many times, but it's been a number of times going back to the early 2000s.
Oh, this building has so much nostalgia for me, and this room, too.
Yeah, we're going to have to get you a parking place out there.
Yeah,
so you
I think
know
I deserve my own security badge. Yes.
And Cubby, welcome into the big family.
It's his first time.
Yeah,
first
time. I call him Cubby the Hubby.
I like that.
How many years did you and I talk about your future husband?
I mean, a long time.
Yeah, which was awesome. You had such a heart to be married.
Yes.
I mean, that's what, whenever we met, it wasn't about your career, it wasn't about singing. That was not what you really talked about. You talked about, is there a man out there for me? Does the Lord have somebody? And I just remember, man, there's got to be some good guy out there, because who wouldn't want to marry Rebecca?
Thank
I mean, she's
you.
Beautiful inside, beautiful outside.
Thank you, Jim.
And it sounds like God's answered your prayer.
He sure did.
Well, let's unravel this a little bit.
Sounds good.
Go back, you know, the movie, obviously, about your family.
Unsung Hero.
And just recap that journey coming out of Australia, which, of course, everybody loves your accent, by the way.
Good. I hope it's still there. I've tried to keep it.
Yeah, that's so good. But you moved to the States as a family. A lot of turmoil, but describe what was taking place and how old you were.
Yeah. So it was 91. I was 14. Six kids in our family. My mom, very pregnant with my sister. And we moved to the other side of the world from Australia because my dad got offered a job in Nashville. And then a couple months after that big move, that job was no longer. And so we were now plunged into a lot of uncertainty and no car, no furniture. And I mean, they show it in the movie, but there literally was sheets that were wrapped around winter clothes as our beds for a little while. And, you know, very, very close to the poverty line and overdue in our rent, you know, months. Just the grace of God that we weren't kicked out of that rental place. But we prayed for money and food and a car and all the things and just saw it happen and saw miracles happen. Saw groceries on the doorstep and checks in the mail that would just cover bills and, you know, somebody paid for my sister to be born in a hospital. We didn't have insurance. I mean, just amazing things. A car given to us out of the blue by a homeschool family. And that gave me a story. That gave me something to sing about. It gave me a testimony when I started full-time at 16 in music.
Yeah. Really Unsung did. Hero was such a good testament to God's faithfulness in your family. And if folks have not seen it, they should get a copy. I'm not sure how you do that nowadays. Is it DVD or you stream
I think
right?
It's online.
Are we up
to
streaming now?
I think so,
Okay, good. So stream it, look for it, Unsung Hero. But they depicted it so well.
They did.
And your mom and dad. Okay, so here's the thing, Cubby. I'll turn your way.
Yeah.
You're both creative people. That right there is usually a red flag for marriage, two creative people coming together.
Yes.
Right. I mean, speak to your creative bent, Cubby, where you were coming from. Mm-hmm. Music was something you enjoyed. What was your background?
Yeah.
He helped direct Unsung Heroes.
Yeah, that's right.
I knew that, yeah.
That was a bold move to get into the family and say, let me help direct it. And that's an in-law move. I didn't try that in my marriage, but go ahead.
Well, luckily I was invited in, so that was good.
Yeah. That helps.
Yes, it does. But yeah, I grew up in a really creative family. My dad was a drummer. My mom was an artist. Grew up with some form of an art project or music rendition pretty much on a daily basis. My dad would have his drums set up in the garage and I'd go out and mess around on those. And when I was about 8 or 9, I discovered kind of music for myself. I stumbled across my parents' old record collection, happened to stumble across Rubber Soul, the Beatles record, and was able to figure out the record player and put that on. And that kind of changed the trajectory of my life in regards to just a passion and love for music, and started playing guitar in junior high. And then in high school, I was in a band and we lost our bass player and said, hey, I'll fill in until we find somebody new. And little did I know, I was the new guy and ended up falling in love with the bass at that point and really became kind of the instrument that just really resonated with me as a person, and just in my makeup, it just felt right on every level. And that just kind of began the process of just a creative journey, and thought I was headed towards LA after high school, but God had other plans and ended up on the mission field for a little while.
So cool. And we're going to catch up with that and get more into it. But there's at least one person out there going, Cubby, where do you get the name Cubby?
Yes.
Gets asked a lot.
It is a common question. And the irony is a lot of people think it comes from my real name, which is Jacob Cubby. But the truth is it came from birth. My dad thought I looked like a bear cub when I was born.
Oh. Because?
I had a full head of hair and apparently came out growling.
I think you weren't calling for salmon, I doubt, at that age. But you were like,
not quite.
Me salmon.
Right.
That's not what you're doing.
Yeah.
Rebecca, let me go back to your story a bit just to paint the picture. During that time, in the movie again, Unsung Hero, you depicted that where you were not the one knocking down doors. I mean, you sang somewhere, somebody heard you and went, wow, she's really good, and said something to your dad about it, like she could be something big. That's really interesting. But when you got into it, I mean, you had some vocal strain, you had issues.
Down the track, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speak to that. Mm-hmm. You know, Lord, I thought you called me into this and now I got all these physical things going on.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, I talk about it in the book, but there was a form of losing my voice that came from stress. It wasn't anything physical. I'd done vocal training and all of that. But I think after nearly 20 years of music and starting so young, like starting at such a vulnerable age, you know, my first tour at 13 in Australia with Carmen and then full time at 16, I think what I didn't understand at that point, that really every balanced adult human being needs to learn, is how to guard your heart, like the Bible talks about. Guard your heart, because out of it flow the wellsprings of life. And I didn't know at that point how to make a call for healthy no's. I think sometimes there's healthy no's and there's healthy yeses, and I needed to protect my own heart. And so I was really burning out, and so my body was fighting back and saying, well, if you're not going to kind of bring some more balance into the schedule, you know, I'm going to shut down on you just out of stress. I think our bodies show these signs of warning, red light. You know, you got to change some things. And if you don't listen, if you override that long enough, our bodies shut down on us. And that's what was happening. So I was struggling to sing and to breathe. Kind of a form of a panic attack on stage, honestly.
No, that's amazing. You know, let me ask, because a general application, you know, someone doesn't have to be in the music business to experience these things.
Yes.
But I think, particularly, I'd say Jean, my wife, you know, early in her teen and 20-somethings, very much a people pleaser.
Me too.
And I was going to ask that question, is that kind of common in the industry? I mean, you're trying to, you know, get a gig and you got to kind of, you know, make exceptions and do things and not do things you want to do in order to get the jobs you need. Mm-hmm. So I would think that would be part of it, crowd pleasing, if I could say it that way. It's got to be part of what kind of turns your crank, so to speak,
100%.
Because, you know, that's just part of the makeup. You're in front, you're on stage, Cubby, you experienced that too in your band.
Yeah.
Speak to that issue as a Christian then, you know, not living for that, but living for
Absolutely.
Something different. And what is that something different?
Yeah, I think the people-pleasing thing, you just hit the nail on the head. My personality type is more of a helper.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to encourage and sow into people and serve and give. Like Mother Teresa was my hero.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I saw, you know, these heroes of the faith that would just like serve and give and pour themselves out, and I was like, that's how I want to be. But what I didn't see is the dark side of that. If you pour yourself out too much without refilling, then you're not going to be filled up enough to continue to give. And even as a mom, I'm learning that in a fresh way too. I want to be the best version of myself for my kids. So what does that look like to where we're filling up so that we can be our best for them? So I didn't know how to do that in those years. I think I'm still learning in a different way now as a mom. But I think it's a call to all of us, because all of us are dealing with stress and anxiety in some level.
Yeah.
You know, it plays out somewhere because our lives are just crazy, right? In the modern world, the Western world that we live in. So we have to know how to guard our hearts.
Yeah. For the parents listening, I didn't set that up. Your kids are how old? You want the test, Cubby, or you want me to have Rebecca answer that question?
So we've got 10. Our oldest is 10, Gemma. And then Imogen, our middle, is 6. And then our youngest boy is 4. And his name is River.
That's great. I love that. So you guys are right in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. In your book, Lasting Ever, you talk about God seeing us and that desire for us to know and be known. And in that context, you point to Psalm 139. What's the connection with Psalm 139?
It's one of my favorite Psalms, probably my favorite psalm, actually. Even when I sign autographs, I sign Psalm 139 a lot. Mm-hmm. Because it says to every single one of us that belongs to Jesus, and every single one of his children, he searches us, he knows us, he sees every move. He is so for us and with us, mm-hmm. and has seen us before we were born. And I just love that sense of, like, God sees these parts of my heart that no one else sees, and he loves me anyway. And I wrote a song actually called Psalm 139 on my second album, my God album. It's the hidden track. Do you remember when hidden tracks were kind of a thing?
Yeah.
So it's on that album, and it pretty much just says a good part of the psalm in the song. But I think even at that age, at 17, when I wrote that song, I needed to know that God sees me in those quiet places. Hmm. I don't need to be seen by all these thousands of people all around the world to feel affirmed. He sees me and loves me.
Okay, true love, if I may. Let's fast forward to this season where you're both kind of waiting for God to show you the spouse.
Mm.
What carried you through that? Because I have kids that are in their 30s and thinking, when? There's a commitment there to be made and a trust in God, but how do you walk that through?
It was a painful reality for me that I found myself in my early 30s, living in LA, unmarried, and really the whole dream of my life had been to be a wife and mom. Like, music was a tide me over till that. Mm. And yet it had not happened yet. And I'd been so public all around the world saying, you know, got this song, Wait For Me, about my future husband. And honestly, I think even my vocal issues that I had in large part were because when I would sing Wait For Me, it was hope deferred making the heart sick. Like, I struggled to even breathe through that song sometimes because it was so vulnerable. What if this doesn't happen? What if there is no guy?
Mm.
And that dream of my heart, you know, what if it didn't come true? And I remember being, you know, in my early 30s there in LA and just wrestling with God about it and really him calling me to this place of, even if this doesn't happen, Lord, give me the strength to still trust you and trust your goodness and stay true to you, even if this dream doesn't happen for me. And I remember coming to that place of surrender. I even have a song about it called I Can Trust You. But it's a painful surrender, right?
Yeah.
When we kind of lay down these big dreams of our heart. But it was soon after that we met. And I do think that was part of the place of freedom that God wanted to bring me, and maybe laying in some ways something down that could have been an idol.
Mm-hmm.
There's freedom in that.
Paul's verse in Philippians where he talked about being content in all things.
Yes.
Yeah. And maybe sometimes God wants us to be content right where we are, even though our heart yearns for something else.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually been probably my favorite verse through my journey with faith is Paul saying that I've been content, found a way to be content in all things. Yeah. And I've, in my journey towards marriage and Rebecca, there was a point where, and I think it was something I learned in a sermon, but essentially, if you can't be content unmarried, you're never going to be content married. If you can't be content without money, you're never going to be content with money. So all these things that we strive towards that we think are going to make us happy or bring us fulfillment, if we can't be content without them, when we actually get them, we're not going to be able to be content. Because it's really finding contentment in where we are, in our position with the Holy Spirit, in our sonship or daughtership, in our identity in Christ. That's where we find contentment. It's not in the physical things or in the marriage. But if we can be content here, we can bring that contentment into marriage, and it just makes it all the more fulfilling.
That's the gold nugget of the program so far, is just that idea that be content where God has you. And I think when you can turn to Him, when you can smile, when you can be okay on the mountaintop or down in the valley, then He's got your heart.
Yeah.
And He knows it. And I think that's what puts a smile on His face.
Yeah.
Because you are His
when
you can be content in all things. And if you're not, it would indicate that you need a deeper relationship with the Lord. Let's get to a lighter side. I want to turn the corner on your courtship, if I could call it that. So I was talking to Jean about this morning. I'll get your answer and I'll tell you what she said. So you guys, I think you met and then, you know, it was kind of like, when are we going to get together? And well, I'm heading to the airport. Do you want to give me a ride? What happened in that moment? Cubby, this is not good. We're going right to your Achilles heel.
Oh, man. Yes. Yeah, there was multiple points in our early dating saga that I thought I'd completely blown it. But
that one specifically.
So this was after the kind of our first date. We had met and she had come to one of my shows in LA, and we ended up kind of spending the evening after my show together, and we played pool and got good food, and then somewhere along the line she said, "Oh, I've got an early flight tomorrow morning. I probably need to turn in." And I volunteered to take her to the airport, which
was very nice of you.
Very chivalrous.
Yes.
I lived about 45 minutes to an hour from the airport. She lived about 5 minutes from the airport. So it made no sense at all.
I tried to shut it down, but she was like, no, let me do it.
Well, that was kind of nice. Yeah, wow,
very
okay.
Nice.
I go home. I set my alarm to wake up to be able to get to her house on time, fall asleep. I'm dead tired. Only to wake up to my alarm, to look at my clock, and realized that I'd set my alarm for when I needed to be at her front door, not when I needed to leave. So I immediately jump out of bed, rush down to my truck, and start flying down the freeway. And she eventually calls and say, "Hey, I need to leave here pretty soon. Are you getting close?" And I was still quite a ways away. And I said, "I'm coming, but I'm a bit away."
So honk, honk. Lots of traffic. Yeah. It's terrible.
Just hold tight. And eventually she got to the point where she's like, "You know what, I'm going to have to get a cab, and my heart is sinking." And I basically said, "Okay, if you have to get a cab, fine, but I'm still going to come meet you at the airport."
Oh. Bingo.
So
it all worked out, and you got to the curb, and there she was.
Well,
that was your saving grace, according to my wife. She said, "Oh, man, if he had not done that, I don't think I'd keep dating him."
Wow, Gene. Well, so him fighting for me, I think that really did. Like, to go that extra mile, literally, you know, I think he pursued me.
I think it was like 45 miles, if I heard the story right.
Yeah, I think so. But he did pursue me. And I think I had had guys in the past that were somewhat intimidated by my platform and didn't really pursue me that well, were just kind of insecure and kind of played it safe. And he wasn't playing it safe. Mm-hmm. He was going after me and my heart in this really impressive way. So I think it really did stand out to me.
So it was one of your better moments.
In the end, it worked out.
Great decision. Let's cover the proposal. Everybody loves that. So how did you do this, Cubby? I mean, what were you thinking?
It was a bit of an undertaking. So the funny thing is, whenever I felt peace about buying the ring and moving towards engagement, I had this image of Rebecca and I in the snow on a moonlit evening, me getting down on a knee with candles surrounding this scene and me proposing. And that was kind of the scene I had in my head. She ended up inviting me to join her for Christmas in Nashville. So it was my first time doing a small bone family Christmas. And the thing about Nashville is it doesn't snow very much.
Yeah, right.
Hardly ever. Mm-hmm. Maybe once or twice a year you'll get a little dusting, but that's about it.
And generally never on Christmas.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I went out to Nashville about a week before Christmas and had a few things to do. One of those things was ask her dad for permission to marry his daughter.
Oh, so you had that planned?
Had that planned. And then once I got the go-ahead from him, it was all guns blazing to get this plan kind of sorted. So I'd identified this spot. They've got some acreage there at the family farm and identified a spot for the proposal and went to the store and bought a bunch of candles and set up a little Christmas tree with a fire ring and a log that we could sit on. And I'd kind of been checking the weather pretty religiously leading up to Christmas Eve because it was showing rain on Christmas Eve, which was a little devastating. I was like, man, am I going to have to go to plan B? If it's raining, none of this is going to work. And then about a day before Christmas Eve, the forecast changed from rain to snow. Yeah. And sure enough, we all pile in the van to go to Christmas Eve service and it starts snowing. And by the time we get home, there's a blanket of 2 or 3 inches on the ground.
It's magical.
Perfect.
And we have our Christmas Eve dinner and we watch a movie and I ended up falling asleep,
and It's a Wonderful Life, right before he's about to propose to me. And let me say this, he did not know I was going to say yes. At that point, we had not said I loved you to each other. We hadn't talked marriage. We were 9 months into dating, and I loved him. I knew I wanted him to be the one, but I didn't know this was coming. So, yeah,
right after. Well, that was even gutsier.
Yeah. There was a lot riding on it.
I know.
There was a lot riding on it, but woke up from my little nap during the movie, and everybody started going to bed, and I said, hey, Rebecca, do you want to take a walk in the snow? It's such a beautiful evening, and sure enough, the moon had come out, and just this beautiful moonlit.
Perfect. It was like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, it really was. So I ran up and got all the candles lit and the fire going and came back and had a little thermos of tea, and we made our way up the hill and eventually saw this glowing pathway to the scene.
And his vision worked out.
Yeah.
Like, what you had pictured actually worked out. I know. I said yes.
Nobody slipped. Nobody fell.
No.
Everything worked.
Did you even hesitate, Rebecca?
Well, yeah, yeah. How did that hit you?
I was so in shock. I was so in shock. Like, all these presents that he had orchestrated. I had a frog in my apartment back in L.A. that said waiting on the bench, and the frog was just sitting there, you know, waiting for his frog princess. And so he'd noticed that. So he found a little frog and put a little note around it that said, wait no more. He'd written out a scroll of all these things he loved about me. And he said, I love you at the end. And I thought, this is huge. But it wasn't until he actually got the ring out that I was like, this is happening. This is actually happening. I just thought he was being super nice for Christmas. I was like just, my mind was just going, this is the moment that I've been waiting for my whole entire life.
Yeah.
And I said yes. I mean, it was like, this is it. But I was just like, I'm in a movie right now. This is actually happening.
Wow.
And so it was just glorious and amazing. And I'm so thankful that God brought me this prince of a man and that we get to live life together and that my dreams came true.
Mm.
But it was amazing, that pivot point of like, you see your whole future differently in those seconds. Your whole life changes.
Man, what a story. Everybody's out there going, perfect. That was perfect. Way to go, Cubby. And then we're getting some elbows from some of the wives to the husband's ribs. Like, why didn't you do it that way? But, you know, Rebecca, what's so impressive is, again, you and I talking over the years and knowing your heart and your desire to be married. I mean, you have this incredible, successful music career, and you're going, what I really want, Lord, is to be married and have children.
Mm.
That's so beautiful. And what I'd love to do is keep our conversation going. I want to talk about purity, because I know both of you, that was important to you before you got married.
Yes.
That's kind of a wobbly concept in the modern culture, the Christian culture. So let's continue our discussion, and folks can go and hear more about that. But it is so good to meet you, Cubby, and to hear your story. And what a great book, Lasting Ever, Faith, Music, Family, and Being Found by True Love. I mean, that's the love story.
Mm.
You did it. The Lord created it for
faithful.
You.
He's been
he
so
was
good.
Faithful.
Yeah. Well, it's so good to be reminded that God is faithful, and we trust you were inspired by this first part of our conversation with Rebecca St. James and her husband, Cubby. And we hope you'll make plans now to join us for part two. Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
What a beautiful story we've heard today from Rebecca St. James and her husband, Cubby Fink. The journey of music, ministry, and marriage is such an inspiring reminder of how God lovingly weaves our stories together, often in ways we never expect. You know, through the highs and lows, Rebecca and Cubby have discovered the unshakable foundation of God's everlasting love. Their story encourages us all to trust God more deeply with our hopes, our dreams, and especially our relationships. The book we're recommending today is called Vertical Marriage, Honest to the Core and Laugh Out Loud Funny. Marriage coaches Dave and Ann Wilson share the one secret that brought them from the brink of divorce to a healthy and vibrant relationship. Ask for your copy when you call us on 031-716-3300 or visit our website at safamily.co.za. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, hoping that you'll join us next time for the conclusion of this program as we continue to help you and your family thrive in Christ.